Welcome to episode 225 of the Various and Sundry Podcast. I am your host, Matt Harmon, joined live from the Vault Studio on the beautiful campus of Grace College and Theological Seminary by my good friend, my colleague, my co-host, and the man who just finished lecturing on the English Reformation, John Scott Sloat.
We could do some serious podcast episodes about the English Reformation.
Yeah.
We're having a production meeting on Friday, and we could do some serious damage in the English Reformation.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
There's a lot going on there.
Well, we will have to revisit that on our high-level production meeting on Friday.
Mm-hmm. With our vast number of producers.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Tree pollen is in the air. My eyes itch like constantly.
All right.
Do you have this phenomenon? Do you have allergies that kick in this time of year?
I do a little bit, but I'm actually dealing with an ear infection right now.
How old are you?
I know.
Next, you're going to tell me you have hand, foot, mouth.
Well, I don't, but I know someone who's recently had that.
Really?
Yeah.
Careful, it's very contagious.
Well, I'm not in close physical proximity with this person. I'll tell you.
Okay. Does this person have children?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't want to call this person out on the pod because they do listen to the pod.
Okay.
In any case, yeah, an ear infection. Who knew? At 50, you get ear infections.
Really?
Yeah.
Swimming at the pool? Like what?
No, I'm not. I don't know what's going on. But
you need to clean your earbuds maybe a little bit more.
No, I don't know. I mean, but yeah, I saw the doctor this morning. Got the amoxicillin and ear drops.
Really?
Yeah.
Painful? Like
pain that will move down into the jaw occasionally.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes, and these ear drops. So welcome to our medical system here. The first set of drops that the doctor looks at and goes, well, this is the one I'd put you on. You have to do like 4 drops in your ear twice a day.
Okay.
That's doable. And then we look up the price and it's like, yeah, that's going to be like $80 for those ear drops. Do you have another option? It's like, well, I could put you on this other one that's much cheaper. The problem is you have to do 4 drops in your ear 4 times a day.
Okay.
Like, all right, doable to save the – I don't know, what was it? I probably saved $50.
Yeah, worth it.
To do that. So, yeah.
Man, ear infection.
Ear infection. Who knew?
Probably picked it up at daycare, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just crazy. Crazy. So if you would like to get in touch with the show and share your ear infection story – you can reach us on Twitter at VNSPod. You can email the show, variousandsundrypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook and on YouTube, and we would love for you to leave a 4 – no, not even a 4. Let's be bold. Let's ask for a 5-star rating.
What possessed you to say 4?
I don't know. I'm not
Interesting.
Sure.
Interesting.
It's probably the ear infection.
It's probably the ear infection. It took away a star.
Yeah, 5 stars only, please. You can say whatever you want in the comments, but 5 stars only, please.
Snarky comments are welcome, but 5 stars.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, John, let's talk some sports.
All right.
This weekend, big story was probably, I'd say, just the start of the NBA playoffs.
NBA playoffs got going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you watch any of the NBA playoff games?
No. I was at some family engagements, and it was on, and I was able to, like,
catch
check
snippets.
Out scores and bits here and there, but not much. Very pleased with my Knicks.
Yeah.
Winning game 1 against the 76ers.
Yes. What was the final margin of that game? Do you remember?
It was like 8 or 9, something like that.
Okay.
I know this because somebody I was with had money on the Knicks winning by 3.
Okay.
So more than 3.
Okay.
They were very pleased.
That game almost none of the games were close.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all the games were blowouts.
Yep.
That game was close.
Close-ish. Yeah.
And then the game last night, the first game between the Thunder and the Pelicans, that one was actually – that ended up being a 2 or 3-point game.
Yeah.
Every other game was just a a thumping, it seemed like, which was – that can't be good for the ratings. You know, I turned on the – like, what was it, Saturday night? Whatever night the Pacers and Bucks was on.
Okay.
Turned that on out of curiosity. It's like a minute before halftime, I think. And the Pacers are down 27.
Yeah.
Who wants to watch this?
Yeah.
You know, like
– go to bed.
Yeah. So all the higher seeds won mm-hmm. their first game. That's
hopefully there's some parity as the playoffs go on.
Maybe after we get out of this first round.
Yeah.
But your Knicks look like they're on a collision course. Guess who would they get in the second round? They would get who's the third seed? Probably who's the third
is it
seed?
The Bucks.
It is the Bucks. You're right.
Yeah.
So.
Seems that way.
Yeah. I mean, we're one game in. Weird things happen in the playoffs.
Yep.
But, the Sixers, although they have the talent, I think, to be dangerous, Embiid is just a shell of himself right now.
Yeah. He was hobbling pretty good.
Yeah. So, not much going on there, I don't think. Let's talk some baseball.
Yeah.
How are your New York Metropolitans doing?
They won 6 of the last 7 games.
Okay. You were waiting for me to ask that question.
Absolutely. I think we were on the air last. They took 2 or 3 from the Braves. Mm-hmm. They swept the Pirates. And okay. They took 2 or 3 from the Dodgers.
Oh.
So, I mean, those are the Braves are very, very good.
Yes.
2 or 3 from them, that's good. The Pirates have started hot.
Mm-hmm.
Sweeping them was delightful, and then 2 or 3 from the Dodgers. That's Dodgers are very, very good too.
Hmm.
So we're in San Francisco tonight.
Okay,
game starts at 9:45 p.m.
So you're not going to catch any of that.
I will catch the first inning or two.
I see.
I will catch the first inning or two. I'll catch the first little bit there, but
okay.
Not long.
Yeah,
I'm not long for this world at 9:45.
No, are you watching that on your phone, on a tablet?
Probably the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll probably put it on my knee and have a book on the other knee. That's probably what'll happen.
Yeah. Well,
I just got a biography of Thomas Cranmer the other day.
Oh, so nice. Okay.
600 pages on Cranmer.
So a wildly, you know, popular level book, obviously.
Yeah, popular level.
Okay. And we are in the lead up to the NFL draft.
Yeah, that's this weekend.
Is it? It might be.
I'm hearing sources close to me called Twitter tell me that Zach Wilson's been traded. Did you hear this?
No.
If I was going to tell you Zach Wilson got traded somewhere, where would you assume he got traded to? So I'll give you we traded Zach Wilson and a 7th-round pick for their 7th-round pick.
Hmm. That sounds like a move from like the Bears or the Panthers.
Hmm. No, think closer to home.
For Zach
Wilson.
The Broncos.
The Broncos made that trade, or at least that's what's being reported right now. I don't think that's official.
Okay. Yeah.
How do you think Zach's going to do in Denver?
Well, I don't remember who they all have in that quarterback room anymore.
I don't know that they have anybody.
Trevor Siemian, is he there still?
No, he's with the Jets this last year.
Okay. I can't remember who.
They got rid of Russ. They had
Well,
Russ.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just trying to remember even who they had. Because they benched Russ at the end of the year.
They did, yeah.
I don't know. They had some Northwestern kid, didn't they? Besides Siemian. I can't remember. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, how the NFL draft shakes out. This was last weekend, I guess, but, spring college football.
Nice. Has started.
Well, it's wrapped up for most teams with their spring game being the capstone. So Ohio State is done with their spring game, and you know, spring games are hard to evaluate. It's like watching a practice. So on the one hand, even when you put the ones against the ones out there, you're like, well, I don't know. Is the offensive line that bad or is the defensive line that good? I don't know. Hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah.
But the defense looks great. Offensive line still has some question marks. But the question will come down to offensive line and the quarterback. It feels weird that you have to wait now so long for that. And now there's another transfer portal window that happens after spring football. Why do we need two transfer portal windows?
By the way, speaking of transfer portals, a couple Grace students entered the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And did you see Sports Illustrated ran an essay on Elijah from Grace?
I did not see that, no.
Yes. Now, it was the IU fan page that's on the SI website. So it's a little deep. It's kind of like a blog. You know, big websites will do that.
Yeah.
But it was all about Elijah being the top recruit or the top transfer from a junior college, which apparently we are in IU's eyes. But yeah, I can't remember if I told this on the podcast. My real estate agent texted me about Elijah last week or a couple weeks ago about like, how good is he? You know, and I was like, my goodness, this is just weird.
Yeah. I know he has received a large number of inquiries.
Yes.
Large number.
Well, and I think our coach here has received a large number of phone calls asking about him.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I have more to say about that, but I can't say that on the pod. So.
Okay. Well,
that's a
post-pod.
Post-pod.
Post-production conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But anything else in the world of sports that you're keeping an eye on?
Man, trying to think. I don't think so. I think we pretty much covered it. I mean, Scottie Scheffler played really well this weekend again.
Yeah, it's funny how with the world of golf and tennis in particular, how some tournaments are designated as majors and get all of this attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next weekend, there's another tournament and like, you know, hardly anybody watches.
Yeah.
You know, that's true with tennis, you know. And obviously some of that has to do with just history and tradition and all that sort of stuff.
Location.
And location, yeah. But, I just don't know in terms of I'd be curious to see what the ratings are for golf, even like with the Masters this past, you know, a week ago now. How are those ratings? Does Scottie Scheffler move the dial on the TV ratings? I don't know.
I don't know that he does.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem like you have the big name guys anymore that are like, oh, if Phil's in contention on Sunday or Tiger's in contention on Sunday, it's must-watch TV.
Yeah.
You pull in the sort of fringe casual golf person. With those individuals.
I'm not sure we'll see anything like Tiger ever again.
No, we won't.
That was so special. Like, you could feel it, right? It was the energy as he's like walking down the fairway, walking down 18, and like the crowd is crowding around him. Mm-hmm. And
Yeah.
It was just wild.
Yeah, you'll never see. I'm not saying there'll never be another player as good as Tiger. There probably will be eventually at some point at some level. But in terms of cultural moment and just him bursting onto the scene like that and like instantaneously dominating the tour, like jumping in and then suddenly being like overnight he's the best player
was
in the world.
Was it the 1996 Masters? Was that it?
97.
97 Masters where he won by like 15 strokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And was must-see TV.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of that has to do with him being African-American and having, you know, like – There had never been a prominent African American golfer before.
Sure.
And so there were all these cultural aspects to this. And then you get the backstory of his dad groomed him for this. Like literally from age like one and a half or two, he had groomed his son to be this generational talent.
Have you read Wright Thompson's The Cost of These Dreams?
No. Well,
I got it for Jake for his graduation.
Yeah, I think I've skimmed through it.
So
because there's a chapter in there on
the final chapters on Tiger.
Yeah,
and I saw an interview with the author. Wright Thompson's an incredible sports writer, probably one of the best.
Yeah,
and I saw an interview and they said, so Tiger wouldn't sit down with you for an interview for this book. He goes, no, he wouldn't do it. He goes, if you could ask Tiger one question, what would it be? Have I told you this story before?
Probably, but I don't remember the details.
And Wright Thompson looks at the interviewer and goes, I would ask him this question. Yeah, I would say, do you enjoy golf? And the interviewer was like, are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, yeah, I think he enjoys golf now. Yeah. I think when he was dominating, I don't think he enjoyed golf.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, boy, could you imagine being that good at something and not enjoying it?
But isn't that akin to Jokic?
Yeah. Well, I don't know Jokic's story very well.
I mean, basically, he's been asked in interviews about him, his success and all that sort of stuff, and he just basically doesn't seem to care. He's like basically, it's not a big deal to him that he's arguably one of the, I don't know, 3-4 best players in the NBA right now. He was – when they were talking about after they won the title last year, they asked him about, you know, are you looking forward to the parade and celebrating with the fans? He's like, wait a minute. There's a parade? When is that? I have to stick around for that? Like, he wanted to get back home.
Yeah.
And like, he's just he's not enamored with all of the success, all of the – and so there's been a little bit of a sort of cottage industry of stories around that, like, it's bad for the NBA to have this guy as one of your best players.
But that seems like he's enthralled with other things. It's not that he despises basketball.
I don't think he despises it. No.
I think this author – I think Wright Thompson's point is he actively does not like golf.
I don't think even when – yeah, I doubt that was the case to that extent. I can see him not necessarily enjoying it,
mm-hmm.
but like despising it when he's dominating. I don't think so.
Anyway, Wright Thompson's The Cost of These Dreams. Yeah. Worth the read. Excellent writer.
There you go. All right, John, we need to move on. You ready?
We did. We went too long on a sports segment where we didn't have much sports to talk about.
Well, that's what we do.
Yeah.
All right. Today we come to the final installment in our series on
the final chapter,
Christianity and Liberalism by J. Gresham Machen. And apparently there's a new biography of Machen that's come out. Did you see this?
Based on our podcasting, somebody
yes,
decided to
obviously,
make a –
obviously.
We're now both on Amazon looking for it.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the title. It's not it's published by Eerdmans. So that makes me suspicious already.
Okay, I see it here. Machen's Hope, the yes. transformation of a modernist in the New Princeton by Richard Burnett.
I think that's right, yeah.
Well, it says will be released May 21st, 2024.
Okay, so it's not out yet. Gotcha.
That's got to be it.
Gotcha. Anyway, it's funny to be at a point where now you have people competing over Machen's legacy in terms of how do we appropriate him for our contemporary discussions.
Well, I should say the one that's coming out is the Kindle version. It looks like the hardback's already out.
Oh, is it? Okay.
638 pages.
It's competing with the Cranmer biography.
It really is. It's similar size.
Yeah. How much are they charging for that hardback through Amazon?
The hardback?
Yeah.
They are charging – well, they say it's 22% off as they love to publish on the site.
Yeah.
$35.
Okay. That's not outrageous.
Mm-hmm. $35.83.
Not outrageous. Anyway, so we have reached the final chapter in – Christianity and Liberalism on the Church. And so John so we'll talk about this particular chapter and then we'll set some time aside to think big picture just about takeaways from the whole book.
Yeah.
So this chapter on the Church, what are some things that immediately stood out to you?
So I thought it was interesting. He begins and talks for a good while about institution building
mm-hmm.
and how liberalism is very interested in social institution building,
yeah.
But wanting it to be almost all-encompassing.
I'm going to tweak that statement just a bit. I don't know about institution building so much as institution control. Because I think – because part of what he talks about in here is the whole like them coming into established denominations that have clearly defined doctrinal statements.
Yeah.
And coming in and saying, well, we want to be in positions of authority, but we don't necessarily hold to the doctrinal positions of the institution.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he does talk about that quite a bit.
So I guess I'm just – maybe that I'm not trying to be pedantic, but it's less about them starting new institutions than it is them – taking over existing institutions.
Well, and shaping those institutions
to
meet some of the criteria that they have.
Yes.
Yes. He talks about that, and he talks about the institution of the church and not being an all-encompassing institution that's for all mankind, but for being a narrow sect of people. I think talking about institution building and institution shaping is a really important topic and a really interesting topic, and I really enjoyed reading him.
Yeah. He also responds in part to the what he perceives as the liberal criticism that he doesn't quite put it like this, but it's essentially the classic, you Christians are so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good. That you're so interested in the salvation of souls that you really don't care enough about the holistic well-being of of people.
Yeah.
How would you respond to that charge? Because we hear that today.
We hear
people saying that certain forms or denominations of Christianity are so heavenly minded that they're no earthly good.
Yeah, I would say I'm hearing that less and less. Is that a fair statement? Like, I don't feel like I've heard that. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Maybe not that explicit. I feel like in our contemporary context, there can be such an emphasis on from some on social justice that if you're not doing the things that they think you should be doing in terms of
– you're not being the church. That seems to be more of the criticism. Maybe that's the new verbiage of the criticism.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Which again gets back to then, what's the mission of the church?
What's the mission of the church? Yeah, my response is, my general response would be something to the effect of, well, I actually think I'm dealing with their greatest need. Their greatest need is the salvation of their soul.
Yeah.
Even if they're hungry on the street, their greatest need is their salvation of their soul.
Right. I saw this quote on Twitter recently. I forget who said it. I think Matt Smethurst actually retweeted it or quoted it. Basically,
we like Matt.
Yeah,
we don't. I've never met Matt.
He
really liked your Philippians commentary. We know that
he did.
Book of the year from Matt.
Anyway, he totally derailed that. The quote was something like, in response to people saying, you Christians don't care about people suffering.
Yeah.
That the in one sense, a biblical answer is, oh, no. We care about their eternal suffering.
Yeah.
As well as their
– absolutely.
You know, present and physical or whatever other kinds of suffering. That it's a misnomer to say that if you're only – you know, if you're – interested in preaching the gospel, you don't care about people suffering. Well, no, we care about the worst kind of suffering, the
absolutely.
Kind of suffering that won't ever come to an end. So I think he deals with that charge a good bit. And then he does move into talking about some other forms of institutions. He talks about schools in here, which again, it's just a fascinating glimpse into a reality 100 years ago. It's just a different context.
Oh, yeah.
And another piece that I found interesting is and I probably see this through the lens of more contemporary denominational discussions, but he pushes back hard against the push of liberalism that says, well, why can't we just have kind of the big tent within the denomination? Sure, you guys can believe what you want to believe and we can believe what we want to believe, but we can still be all part of the same denomination and just kind of work in our own different directions, which is something that the United Methodist Church has tried for the last 40 years and has finally come to a point
it's where break, breaking apart
where it's breaking apart.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not tenable. You can't yeah. – it's just not a reasonable approach for a church body, whether in a local church or even a like denominational structure.
Yeah, and I do think there's a balance there, right? Because I do think like you and I have published something at the Gospel Coalition. That's a fairly big tent.
Sure. Well, broadly Reformed, broadly complementarian.
Yeah. Yeah, but Presbyterians, Baptists, mm-hmm. there's some Charismatics in there.
Yeah,
there's a handful. It's fairly broad, but there are some yes. out there that would say like even that is too broad and it needs to be mm-hmm. narrowed in. So yeah. I think there's a balance there.
Sure. Yeah, some of that's a reflection of I think what's always been a tension within the broader evangelical movement. It feels like there are these sort of expansions and contractions
mm-hmm.
in terms of, hey, let's partner across denominational lines for the advance of the gospel. Oh, now we got some people in here that we don't like or we're not sure that we want to partner with.
Yeah.
Now let's contract it back down again.
Yep.
It's almost like watching lungs take in air and expand and then contract again.
I agree. Yeah. And it's running on a 20-30 year cycle and
yeah.
And I think we are in a time of contraction right
we
now.
We are. Yes.
So we're seeing things like Together for the Gospel go away.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I think
seeing some new denominations forming mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So anything else from this chapter before we maybe jump into big picture reflections based on
maybe what is your – so as I was reading him talk about building these institutions, building schools, and what parallels did you see to sort of modern world? Because I do think there is a sense in which some modern, more liberal Christians are moving into – trying to move into positions of power and shape the institution in their liking. There's also a side that they're trying to tear down institutions as well and trying to deconstruct some of those institutions also.
Yes.
How much of one, how much of the other do you see? Because he seems to – there doesn't seem to be the deconstruction side of things in his day.
Correct.
And that seems like a unique piece of our time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think some of that is a reflection of the full flowering and blooming of postmodern thought, which was not, you know, you can look at Machen's day and see the, you know,
the little seeds of it,
yeah. But you're not seeing the full flower of it. We're well past the full flower and into whatever post-modernity we're in, which part of that comes with deconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Of when you abandon absolute truth, essentially all that is left is power,
mm-hmm.
and who gets it, and how do they wield it? And so that's a large impulse behind the deconstruction piece. Now let's make the caveat: institutions aren't perfect, and there are some things that institutions do that need to be called out.
And criticized. Absolutely.
And reformed mm-hmm. and changed. And perhaps in some cases, maybe even
shut down. Yep.
That is true. That happens. But there's clearly a sort of contemporary cultural impulse in that direction. But it feels like I don't know how to divide those portions up. I don't know that it's 50-50 in terms of the burn it all down and, you know, start over. Let's try to change for the better the existing institutions. How would you divide that? And what?
I don't know.
I don't think it's 50-50.
I don't think it's 50-50 either. But I don't know what side's bigger. You know, I'm like looking at them going like, well, sometimes.
I think the side of let's try to try to change institutions.
Let's shape the
still
institution.
Still bigger than the just burn it to the ground.
Than the anarchist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably right. I mean, maybe a 70-30 is probably where I'd be. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit more. As I think about the number of institutions that have as I think about Columbia University right now, you know, there's been some serious shaping of that institution.
Yes.
You know, the institution that guys like Alexander Hamilton attended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty significantly changed.
Yes.
Or you know, they used to have a really excellent journalism school. Some of my favorite journalists are Columbia grads.
Yeah, but even within – I mean, if you think about both denominations and you even think about schools, those tend to be within the sort of evangelical world, the two big kinds of institutions. You've got denominations and you've got schools. There are some other institutions, but those are the kind of the two big categories,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
You know, you look at what's going on with – higher education and even seminary education, or even just broadly speaking, Christian universities and colleges. You're seeing some of those pressures. You're seeing a desire and an effort from within to mold and shape institutions in new directions, and a counter effort, at least in some.
Yeah.
To say no, we're not going that direction. We're going to stay faithful to the gospel in this context.
Machen is pretty interesting because he was at Princeton at a fairly historic institution, fair to say, right? Is yeah. that a fair statement?
I think that's an understatement. Yes.
And went and started a new institution.
He did.
What do you make – what lessons do you pull from that? Like what sort of things are – at what point do you go out and start a new institution?
I think that's a really hard question.
You think it's contextual to each situation pretty much?
Yeah. I'm sure if I had more time to think about this, I
am just spurring it on you.
I think I might be able to come up with some – you know, what are some break points where you're like, if you get to this point, you should go start something new versus try to hang around and reform something.
Yeah. But our own school, Grace, here was started out of a professor at another university, you know, going – I actually think he was fired. But for having views on this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have been in the Machen camp. He would have been much more dispensational than Machen, obviously. But mm-hmm. – started his own institution here.
Yes.
Well, yeah. in Akron, and then moved it here, but started Grace Seminary.
Yeah. I think some of that depends on what kind of resources you can marshal towards the start of something new.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of that also can depend just on the structures of the institution within which you are working. Are there – is it reasonable to see a path forward to bringing change or to in essence to maintaining faithfulness in that sense, in this context? Because honestly, when it comes to denominations, I think the Southern Baptist Convention is about the only one that I'm aware of that's ever come back from like basically becoming a liberalish, mainline-ish place to now much more robustly being a conservative, traditional, Bible faithful denomination.
Yeah.
Are you aware of another one?
No, I'm not. No. I mean, most of the time they go out and start something new.
Yes.
PCUSA. I mean, he talks positively of PCUSA in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to laugh where I'm like, actually, you should come see the PCUSA USA today.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wait 45, 50 years and then.
It's pretty wild. It's a pretty wild change.
Yeah. Yeah. For
sure. He'd be PCA today, right?
Yes. Yeah. Or maybe OPC.
OPC. Yep.
Orthodox Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. probably not EPC. See, again, you're seeing the splintering even in the us identifying options out of the PC USA.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
So I think that if you have the institution, if you have the resources necessary to start something new,
mm-hmm.
there can be a great benefit in that.
Yeah.
And especially if you're willing to forego cultural esteem, because that's part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially leaving Princeton. It's one of the Ivies. It's a big
deal.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, it's a huge deal.
It's a huge deal. And to leave that and start something distinctly evangelical.
Well, and knowing that you're never going to be as big as them. You're never going to have their history.
You're never going to have their big in the sense of like cultural reputation.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, yeah, you're definitely not. So, yes, I think those are all factors that you have to weigh.
Yeah.
But a lot of it comes down to just do you have the resources?
Mm-hmm. And the perseverance. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, starting new institutions are really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a difficult setting for sure.
Yeah. Any other big picture takeaways from this?
I really want to read a Machen biography.
I do too.
I think maybe a summer read. We have
I don't think we can do
682 pages. No.
No, probably not.
Expense probably it not. To the pod. Machen soap. Yeah. Have Richard on the pod?
I don't know. I don't know that I can get him. So we'll have to see. But I have enjoyed this series, I think, even more than I thought I would.
Hmm.
Like coming into it, I thought, oh, this would be good.
Yeah.
And coming out of it, I think, I really enjoyed that. Like I think that this is an interesting snapshot in history to learn from.
Yeah. It's been good. I've enjoyed it.
Good. All right. Time now for This Day in Sports History.
This Day in Sports History, April 23, 2024, year of our Lord.
We've got like – once this episode drops, we have a week and a day left in the academic semester.
That's wild.
Yeah. Summer's coming.
1954, the NBA adopts the 24-second shot clock.
I don't think I realized it went back that far.
I don't think I did either. That it went to the 50s.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It's genius, though.
Mm-hmm. Keeps the game moving.
Think of what it does for just the watchability of the product.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it encourages offense, and it keeps the fast pace of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fast – like, that's what people want to see. They want to see back-and-forth action, a decent bit of scoring. They don't want to see – you know, 90-second possessions.
Oh, yeah.
Where people are running the four corners and, you know, that kind
of
stuff.
Or sitting at the bottom of half court and holding the ball.
Yeah.
Till the clocks run out. Yeah.
Yeah.
1962, the New York Mets. Your New York Mets. My New York Mets. Sorry, I was speaking to the listeners out there.
Okay.
Win their first game ever after going 0-9. They beat the Pirates 9-1. They haven't lost since.
April 23rd, 1962. First win.
Late start to the season there.
Yeah. Nine games in on April 23rd. So they probably started the, I don't know, like the 10th.
Yeah, something like that. 1977, Chess master Vlastimil Hort, I don't know, played 201 games simultaneously and only loses 10.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good. I don't even know how you would do that.
I mean, I guess you would literally have them, like, I don't know, all in a big, like, open room, right?
And he just walk around?
Walk to the table, look at that, do his move, come to the next table,
wow.
Make his next okay. move. I don't know.
1993, Orlando's Nick Anderson scores 50 points in the Magic's 119-116 win over the New Jersey Nets at the Meadowlands. Anderson's feat is overshadowed by Shaquille O'Neal, who rips down the backboard in the first quarter, delaying the game 45 minutes.
I wonder when the last time there's been a shattered backboard in an NBA game.
I mean, it might be 93. I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure that once Shaq came into the league, they probably had to go back to the drawing board and go to these
let's build this from the ground up.
Be like,
let's over-engineer this bad boy.
These have to be engineered like 1,000 times beyond what they are now.
Yeah. Hmm. 2023 Boston Red Sox outfielder Masataka Yoshida.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Hit a solo home run and a grand slam in the eighth inning in a 12-5 win over the Milwaukee Brewers in Milwaukee.
There you go.
Wisconsin.
Yes. That's where it's located.
Yeah. Yep.
So who do you like out of that?
Probably Shaquille O'Neal ripping down the backboard. What do you think?
I can go with that. I can go with Shaq. I mean, we do have Shaq. You know, we've had Shaq occasionally.
Have we chosen him yet?
Maybe, I'm not sure. But again, we're 225 episodes deep, John. I mean,
Vlastimil Hort could be. I don't know that we're going to come across him again.
That's true. Though, are we counting chess?
Chess really isn't a sport.
Any sport?
Yeah, probably not. Anything you wear a three-piece suit to play. Yeah, you know, I just don't think it's a sport.
I don't know. If you go back though, I bet if you go back and look at old footage of golf, you got some guys out there in three-piece suits.
I imagine so.
Like in the 30s?
I was going to say sports you can drink and play at the same time are not sports, but golf would fall into that.
For sure.
I don't know. Who do you like? Do you like Shaq or do you like
– I love the name Vlastimil Hort, but I just don't know how to put a chess guy down.
Yeah. I think Shaquille O'Neal might be the way to go.
I agree. One thing you liked?
This past week, we had some news that came on the radar. That was this week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where you text me – when was that? Wednesday.
Maybe Wednesday.
I got a text from you saying, have you seen this? And it was a link.
And which is not uncommon in our text exchanges.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's about a link a week probably we're sending one another. And so I saw it was the Carson Center at TGC. Is that who did it?
It'll eventually be housed under that. But basically it's Gospel Coalition.
Coalition. And it was Best Commentaries.
Mm-hmm.
On
New Testament books.
New Testament books. And I just clicked it, went through, and you told me to check Galatians. And I went to Galatians, and I was expecting to see your commentary there, obviously. However, it was our commentary there.
Well, both.
Yeah. 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 Your commentary was still there.
Yeah.
But under introductory, somebody wrote some lovely words about our commentary.
Yeah.
Called it lucid, I think, in a positive sense.
Is there ever a negative sense for lucid?
I always think of somebody on drugs as being like, I don't know.
Well, no, if you're
– it's clear, right?
Yeah. So you're not lucid if you're on drugs. That you're
– you're illucid? Is that
–
I feel like I've always heard lucid as applied to drugs and I had to
– I think it's as a – like you were on drugs but now you're lucid.
But now you're lucid. Yeah. Okay. Maybe that's it. But they had ours right at the top under introductory. And had some very kind words to say,
yeah,
about our commentary, and that was a pretty big, pretty exciting moment.
Yeah, it was.
I sent that to all my family, and nobody responded for hours. Yeah, it's like, well,
there you go. Yeah. Well, that and $6 will buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks these days.
Yep.
Yeah, that was fun that was on there. Our Second Peter one is mentioned there as well.
Yep.
And then my more extensive ones on Philippians and
Galatians. Second Peter, Jude.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Luke and – Acts will be added eventually.
Oh, we'll see. Got to get them done first.
Yeah. You got to be getting – how close are you to finishing up Acts? Or excuse me, Luke.
I am on chapter 22, verse 60 right now.
In like a final draft form or first pass?
My first pass tends to be a little further along than a first pass. So
okay. Pass and a half?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're getting toward the end there.
It's in sight.
Yeah.
But those are long chapters.
Yeah. Well, I think verse for verse, Luke – or word for word, Luke is the longest.
It is the longest book in the New Testament, yeah.
And the most – he does the most writing.
Yeah.
He does more writing than Paul does.
Yes. 27 – I think 27% of the New Testament is written. Between Luke and Acts, that's 27%.
That's a lot.
So it is. Speaking of commentary writing.
Good segue.
Last week, my doctoral mentor, Doug Moo, and his wife Jenny were in town.
They were a lot of fun.
Yeah, speaking on campus, doing several different events and recording some stuff for our online platforms and that kind of thing. So really good to see them. And we had a nice event with them on Wednesday of last week. And then Thursday we hosted him and Jenny for dinner at our home.
Oh, nice.
And then Friday – after we had like a lunch with staff, seminary staff and faculty with them, kind of took them on a nice little tour around campus. And then we walked on the trails a little bit because they love the outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, just what's wild. Okay. This is what like was a discombobulating moment for me. We were just talking about, I was talking about with him about his career and that kind of thing. And I realized, I said, Doug, I am now the age that you were when I started studying under you.
Wow. Wow.
Or like right about it, like within a year or two, right? Right when he moved from Trinity to Wheaton. I'm that age right now, which was just wild because I remember like – He's a giant man in more than just his physical size in terms of – he's like 6'7". I mean he's a tall man. But it was wild to think like I'm at the same point that he was then. Just the more you age, the more you start to have some of those moments where you're like, wait a minute. I'm that age now? And you look back and think of how you looked at that person at that age and think – I assumed they knew a lot more probably than they did, if my experience is any guide here. So,
oh goodness,
yeah. But a lot of fun to see them. They're very sweet people. So, that is my one thing I liked. All right, John, we have talked NBA playoffs. We have talked the New York Metropolitans. We have finished our series on Christianity and liberalism. We have talked Shaquille O'Neal.
Breaking backboards.
We have talked about our commentaries being on the Gospel Coalition recommended.
That's right. Yeah, just still wild to me.
And we have talked about Doug and Jenny Wood being in town.
Thought my name was a misprint on that website.
So I think, by definition, we have covered our various and sundry topics. And so all that's left to say is, until next time, show real good.
Later.